there's a goal that everyone remembers. It was back in old 72. We all squeeze the stick and we all pull the trigger.
I don't care how many beers you had last night. It felt good to wake up this morning. That Canadian air, that wasn't cold, it was crisp. It was delightful. Those big ass snowbanks, gorgeous. Woo! Air tasted sweet. Coffee was a little bit better. Our game. So much for the meaningless hockey tournament crowd. RIP. Some people will never accept this position, and I totally understand it. But that was the biggest game since the Golden Goal. That was the biggest game since Vancouver. Sochi's still Olympics. That counts for more. It always kind of will. But Sochi, we were this established superpower that was going into the tournament as a heavy favorite, rolled over everybody. It was almost like in some ways, the pressure was off. The pressure was off. We had won the big one. We won in Vancouver. And as much as there were threats, it never really felt that way. There were really never moments of terror. And I said it yesterday, the world has clearly closed the gap here on hockey, that Sweden's better. It's a country of 10 million people. They push Canada overtime. Finland is better. They've got superstar talent. They play a gritty style. And they gave Canada a scare late. And the Americans beat Canada in the round robin. And it really sparked the conversation of where's this game at and what is a final going to look like between these two teams? Have the Americans stolen our X factor? Have they become us? Have they become the dominant force? Are they deeper? Are they better? Are they more cohesive? Do they have the better vibes? Are they more connected? Are they playing for something bigger than themselves? Are they understanding that moment? Are they going to be able to capture that moment? And it was scary, man. It was scary. And if you're going to sit there and pretend that it wasn't, I think you're lying or you don't have the pulse of it, period. That was scary hours. And leading up to that game, all it was doing was getting worse and worse and worse and worse. It was getting just anxiety driven for me. I was loving it. I was trying to calm myself by watching and looking at old Canadian clips of us beating the Americans. There was an underlying confidence of these guys always win the exhibition point. They love the round robin win and the seed of doubt that they try and get to plant, that false hope that they try to plant. And my God, that made this even sweeter. That made this even sweeter, knowing that those guys were playing Freebird and the Kachuk brothers are taking every opportunity to crack a microphone and share their dumb little thoughts about Canada hockey and group chats and our connectivity. They're begging their president to show up at the game, barely get a phone call. He doesn't know any of their names. He's like, yeah, I heard the speech. Rah, rah, rah. Yeah, we love America. You go be Americans. It was terrible. It was really terrible. If you've heard it, oh, it's a complete miss. Oh, they really thought they had it. And to snatch it back and to keep it as ours. God, it has not felt this good in a really long time. And so after the game, John Cooper hits the podium, right? He hits the podium and he addresses the hockey world, essentially. And he says, we needed it. Not just the team, but the country, that Canada needed a win. And, you know, say what you will about John Cooper. Every once in a while, I think he gets a little poetic. I think that he clearly likes the sound of his own voice. Who am I to criticize? But he nailed it in that moment. Canada needed a win. And this is something that I've been talking about for quite some time. You might not feel the connection to hockey that some other people do, but it is still our sport. We are the standard bearer in this game, and it's not the same in anything else. This is our sport. Canada basketball has made these incredible strides. Canada soccer has made these incredible strides. We are not the pinnacle. We are not the ones that the rest of the world looks up to. Canadian exceptionalism in this sport means something, and it's something different to the fabric of our country, and we've been missing it, man. We've been missing it. It hasn't been there since 2014. And again, even in 2014, it was coming off of the high of the Vancouver Olympics, and it didn't quite feel the same. And absence makes the heart grow stronger or fonder. I Ricky'd that in, that's another Canadian thing, you know, do throw a little Ricky-ism in there. But yeah, absence makes the heart grow fonder, and that's what happened with this international tournament. I think a lot of people recognize that even though this was technically an exhibition tournament, and that, yeah, it was technically made up. You know what else was made up? Every other tournament, but whatever. Yeah, none of them were just on the planet when human civilization started to exist. But man, oh man, I really am not going to undersell this. This is the power of sport. We have been so divided as a country for the last, 6 years now? 5 years? It has felt more divisive here than ever before. I think that a lot of people, in examining things that make us Canadian, have questioned those things about our national identity. God, our politicians have questioned our national identity, for God's sakes. But the one thing that you can't question is that Canadians love hockey and that this means something to us and that this is our game. And when the chips are down and we're in a big moment, our players are going to go out there and represent us well. And they did that again. They did that again. They came through in the clutch. And once again, it was a special moment for the game's best player, a true torch-passing moment from Sidney Crosby to Connor McDavid, who gets left open in the slot by Austin Matthews. I'm getting into that with Versteeg in a bit. But, man, we've been missing this. We've been missing something that just makes everybody feel the same way. We've been missing something to celebrate as a country, as a unified front. And this is it. And, God, it feels good that it's still our game. Chris Versteeg of Clever, two-time Stanley Cup champion, proud Canadian, fired up today. How we doing, brother?
I am jacked.
Oh.
Jacked up.
I know. I made a fool of myself in the 680 newsroom when I walked in here. I just started dapping everybody, giving hugs, rolling out like they're trying to do their jobs. I'm like, I don't care. I needed to roll right into the studio today. I could barely contain it.
Well, I'll tell you what. When I went to my kid's school yesterday and every kid was wearing a Canada hockey jersey.
Oof, chills.
And you show up today and every parent is asking, you know, how was the game? Did you love it? You know, they're pumped about it. That's what community is. That's what a country is. And that's exactly, you know, what those players delivered on. That was special. Like I said, going to the school yesterday and seeing my kids wearing Canada jerseys, all the kids at school, how much it meant to the parents and every family from every walk of life. It's pretty amazing.
No, man, it's special. Like, it really is. Like,
I heard you touch on that. It was just another tournament. That's just such a stupid argument.
No, I know.
You put the best players on in the world, whether it's four countries or eight countries, these are best on best. Tournaments have to be made up. Tournaments have to come around, and especially at a time like this in the you know, in the world, there's nothing that was bigger, better, or more needed for the game of hockey and for the country.
Well, I want to get into the game of hockey in a bit, but I'll focus on the country for a little while because, I really don't. You know, when I was texting with you yesterday, I really was thinking about how, kids have not seen best on best. Like, they've seen World Junior tournaments, right? But World Junior tournaments, you're looking at it and going, hey, how much of this was political? Did it take the right rosters? You can't really criticize it because it is just kids, ultimately, like, for the most part, the composition of the roster. And to your credit, like, to the players' credit, it's like, these guys did embrace this. They did care. And that care resonated with everybody else. And that's what made this thing matter differently. And they carried that on their shoulders. Like, Cooper acknowledged it, that he knew the country needed a win and that the players knew that the country needed a win, that those guys are very proud to represent this country, that it's always meant something to wear the Canada sweater. And those guys took that and they once again didn't let the pressure get to them. And for, you know, the ones that say, oh, well, it's a made-up tournament because there's only four nations here, it's like, if it was a made-up, fake, useless tournament, why do you think guys like David, do you think guys like David Pastrnak would be tweeting, like, we want to be a part of this? No, it's because they're all looking at it with great envy because it does matter, because it was a moment for hockey. I think genuinely, in this country, I think you can make the case that it was actually the biggest game since the Vancouver Olympics. And I do think that it was the biggest moment for hockey that I can remember in recent history. Like, this was massive for the game to sell itself south of the border and honestly to reestablish its roots to a certain degree in this country.
It's by far the biggest game. People have talked about Italy since Vancouver. This is by far the biggest game for Canadian hockey because hockey culturally has been under attack yep. in many ways across this nation. And for me, you walk into a rink at a young kid's game, whether you go to the U.S., they believe they're with us now. And they are. They have as many kids playing hockey. They have a swagger when you walk into an American rink that the Canadian, it's almost been beat out of the Canadians. Mm-hmm. I hate to say it. We almost lost that FU mentality, that dog mentality of when we walk into a rink, we're Canadians and you got to beat us. And it was almost like that since culturally it's been hockey in Canada has been honestly under attack, whether it's from the youth programming all the way up to our junior kids who had to take bullets all Christmas, and then it bled into the national program. Did we take the right guys? Can these guys do it? Is USA better? That type of win instilled in Canadian kids that were our hockey players, men or women, are dogs, right? We yep. are, when we walk into the rink, we have that mentality. It was something when I was in the 90s, when Hockey Canada was playing the U.S., me and my dad, we were going into Montana. My dad's like, okay, brings me and my three brothers out of our car, and he goes, start pissing, right? He's like, now you're taking a piss on the American soil, and that's every time you are playing them, you need that mentality. You need to know that when you're going in there, it's damn well war on the ice, and that's the mentality that we need our hockey players to, not say exactly that, but we need to have them be the dogs again. And those players that went on the ice were the dogs again, mm-hmm. and they instilled confidence in kids all across the nation that hockey is Canada's sport, whether mm-hmm. again in the future USA beats us, but it gives that confidence across the nation to every player playing this game.
But it also showcases on that level that this is the standard, right? Like that this is the 100%. Feeling that this is the standard and this is the feeling that you get when Canada beats the United States in this sport and gets to maintain that standard. And you know what you can tell the kids after practice or after the game? You can tell them that Canada hasn't lost best on best back to back to the United States in 29 years. You can tell them that Sidney Crosby now has more championships or golds, however you want to put them, than all of USA hockey put together. Like those things matter. Those things are still clear. And instead of having yet another negative news cycle, like I totally am tapped into exactly what you're saying. Instead of having this continuation of assault on hockey, and I do think a lot of the criticisms have been fair.
But, they have been fair, yeah, correct.
But this is just like, man, it's nice to just remember how this sport, like why it's so important to us in the first place, you know? Like the actual power of the game to unite us, the actual power of the game to make us feel something in our hearts in this country, this swelling of pride that we don't get the same way as I think the Americans do with just about every other sport. That reminder was so crucial for all of us to be able to have that shared experience again.
Yeah, and back to walking into the rink, being a proud Canadian, understanding that mentality is everything. And I couldn't stress it enough more that over the years, it was, you know, it's beat out of you almost.
Yeah.
That mentality has been beat out of you. And then, like I said, you carry it into the World Juniors. It's we're not good, this and that. And correct, there is a lot of fair criticism on the game. Mm-hmm. But it's the mentality of a Canadian hockey player believing they are the best. And when they walk into a rink, that they're going to take care of the job. And I think that type of game instills that across every child, boy or girl across the country that, hey, we're coming here to do business and we're not going to play little brother. We are the big brother and you're going to come beat us, but we believe in ourselves because when we walk into that rink, we're the big dog.
Well, and I think, too, is that there is still this feeling like if you watch the first game, right, and it was a good game. It was a back and forth game.
But Canada's, that game was an epitome to me of them being that swagger.
That's what I'm saying.
Them having that mental edge.
That's what I mean, though. You looked at that, and I don't know how you could. So I put a massive bet down on Canada yesterday, okay? And part of it was because it's just like my heart where I'm like, I believe that they're going to come through. But that belief is still instilled in me, and being a Canadian fan of a certain age that has seen these games and has gone, we have that special something different where there is going to be a moment where our best player is going to get an opportunity and he's going to finish it in overtime. You know what I mean? Like, it's scary and the pucks bounce around and Binnington has to make these big saves, but there is just something about us that I still felt like we are going to be able to get this thing done. And I do think that that confidence, that's going to carry over. So as much as that American swagger might be real, I don't think it was false bravado whatsoever. Like, I think that they fed off the Tkachuks. God, like, how terrifying was Brady on the forecheck in that game? Like, every single shift he's out there, I'm going, oh, but we're not going to be able to get the puck out. Like, he's going to destroy someone, and then they're going to win a puck battle, cycle it around, and then he's going to be around the net, immovable. That was real. That swagger was real. But what they are going to continue to have is, why can't we win the big one? You know, when we play Canada, when all the chips are down and the biggest of games, we're the team that fires it into Binnington's glove. Like, he comes across and turns into Superman. We're the team that leaves Connor McDavid open in the slot and he finishes it. He doesn't make those mistakes. And that is still absolutely unequivocally our edge. And that is going to continue to be our edge heading into the Olympics.
Yeah, big time. I cannot stress enough. It all comes back down to your mental state heading into that game, being beaten before the game even happens. And I felt in game one, I know we came out and fought. I know we came out and scored the first goal, but it was like we were beaten before the game even happened. Mm-hmm. We allowed Tkachuk to dictate it. We allowed their physical play to dictate. We were allowed to be frustrated. The way they talked about themselves, the way they felt about their game, the way they talked about their goalies and their lineup, we were beaten before the game happened. And what yesterday did, I believe, is it reinstilled back into our players from a young age all the way to the top that, hey, we need that mentality. We need to remind ourselves how great we are as a nation, as hockey players. And when we walk into the rink, that's the mentality we need to have. And that's what that team did across the nation. Because as I said, I can't stress enough over how many years that's almost been beaten out of us.
I believe you. I believe you. And I think that, again, that's so important for kids that they can walk into arenas today in this country and hold their heads just extremely high and brim with that pride and play with that kind of passion. And
I was just in a, sorry to cut
yeah,
you off.
Go.
I was just in a tournament in Florida, unbelievable, held by the Gretzkys. We were playing against American teams and, you know, we're the Canadian team and you could just feel the Americans, USA, every time they're playing against us, right? Mm-hmm. It was like, they're very patriotic. They're very proud. And it's like, you want that for our Canadian kids. We walk in there, Canada, you know, them chanting Canada versus USA. You know, those are the things that the kids remember at a young age. These are the moments that kids remember. Those are what's going to allow Canadian teams to walk into American rinks now and reignite that patrioticness about themselves.
Well, and shout out to Montreal, because I actually do think that they do hockey fandom the best. I think Alberta is the next one in terms of like when you watch games on a regular basis when they're held in these spots. But ultimately, Montreal bringing that passion level right out of the gate and reminding like the Canadian players of the care that this country has, I actually do think was crucial to this team's success in the tournament. Like, I will always believe that. People want like, oh, it should have finished in Montreal. I was like, no, thank God it didn't. Thank God at the very outside of this thing, the Canadians got to play in front of that crazy Montreal crowd that's chanting Sidney Crosby's name and reminding everybody what like real fans in this country feel like when they're in a packed arena caring for the red and white. And I'll transition to this in terms of like getting into the actual game, is that if I have a piece of advice for you, when it comes to coaching and maintaining kind of that Canadian standard for the kids. Do you know what it is?
What is it?
Show them Sam Bennett. Show them that game that Sam Bennett played and go, here it is. This is what you can do, and this is what it's like to be a Canadian hockey player in a big moment. Because I know he didn't end up, like, McDavid gets the first star because he scores the overtime winner. Binnington, I'll get into. He was brilliant. Marner was spectacular with time and space. He made a couple of plays that are the ones that you're expecting them to. But I felt like watching that entire game, the guy that gave me the confidence of being like, oh, that is the new, like, that is the Canadian identity, was watching Sam Bennett.
Well, it was the third line Jonathan Toews of yesterday. Like a guy that you could rely on. He's a little more gritty than John, but he's just a guy that gives you that depth down the lineup. He's going to fight for you. He's going to fight for his country. He's going to fight for every inch on the ice. He's going to find a way to score a big goal. He's going to do stuff where you're not always having to rely on the top guys to do it. And those are the guys that are the unsung heroes that come through in the big moments. And I mean, Sam, I played with Sam in Calgary. He always showed up in the playoffs. Regular season Sam was different. Playoff Sam was he was coming to play. And last night, a guy like Sam scoring that goal at that time off a great play by Marner, I mean, it just got us back into the game, and it was such a crucial moment. But Sam Bennett, the way he plays the game is exactly the way and what the Canadian team needed, because he was a bit of a different identity of those top guys, right? He plays a hard game. He plays 200 feet. He's really rounded it out. And if your kid's watching that, 100%, like, not everybody is Connor McDavid. Even when I talk to young players, it's like, you know, what does Connor McDavid do in the summertime? I'm like, Connor McDavid was touched by God. That's one thing. And there's one Connor McDavid on earth, but guess what? You can watch 90% of the other guys that did it through grunt work or figuring out how to play the game proper, finding out different intangibles that allows them to be successful at this level. So guys like Sam are role models to a lot of kids, because you can't always just watch the Connor McDavids. You got to watch guys like Sam. You got to watch guys like Sanheim, who came in and played well, and Harley, and these guys that do other really good things well that make a team. Exactly, make a team win, because when you pick these, you're not just picking the best, you're picking role guys, guys that understand what they need to do to a T, and Sam is one of those guys.
Yeah, I just felt like the dog on the bone mentality, he had it all night. Like, he just popped the entire game around the net, on the forecheck, scoring a big goal, making good defensive plays, finishing his checks, like, he was just all around it. And that's just kind of it. What you touched on there is, yeah, not every kid can be McDavid. Not every kid can be McKinnon. And no disrespect to Sam Bennett. Like, he went fourth overall in the draft, right? Like, he's not some scrubby guy that was like, oh, yeah, he's found in the sixth round. Like, he was a high pedigree player. There's no question. But if you look at it, to me, it's kind of like the basketball thing, why Steph Curry matters more than LeBron, is because you can look at Steph Curry and be like, hey, that's a 6'2" guy who figured out and honed his skills in a way through work. And with Sam Bennett, yeah, I don't think that maybe you can teach that dog in a kid, like, to the degree that he clearly has it. Like, I don't know, you would probably be better knowing that, having been around, you know, not only the pro level, but also coaching kids now for, God, years. But yeah, I think you could look at him and say, I can be Sam Bennett. Like, I might not be the best player on my team. Yeah, I can be Brandon Hagel. I can be Sam Bennett.
Yeah, these are guys, not so much Sam, but Brandon. Think about his path. I was with Brandon in Rockford, Illinois.
Yeah.
When at the end of my career, and he was just a young guy that came in. I think it was his second draft through. And I remember his first ever exhibition game, and I talked to him a little bit before that. I said, you got to do something different than everyone else. And he went out there. He was slashing guys, punching guys in the face. Just, it was like he was just not going to be denied. And that was Brandon Hagel's mindset too. It's just not willing to not be denied, figuring out what other things I can do better than the next guy to get that job. And those are the guys that, they figure it out a little bit later. They figure out what works for them and what doesn't. And the biggest common theme that those guys have is a high motor. They don't stop, like you said, dog on bone, and a willingness to not be denied. And they're going to find a way to do it. They're going to find a way to get noticed, and they're going to find something that works for them. And it's just such a inspirational thing to look at guys like that, that have come from where they have, especially a Brandon Hagel or those guys, that found ways to get there, and they were not going to be denied.
Well, and even just like, again, I do think that, like, people have talked about the Tkachuks in that first game being performative. Like, I've seen some criticism of that. I don't agree with it, because I actually think that part of the reason that they did that was not simply for the cameras. It was to establish, hey, we're bigger than you and we're stronger than you. Like that is what
mindset.
We are. Like, you used to be the big bullies. Go look at old Canada highlights of just the absolute monster hits that this team has leveled in the past on these teams, right? Like, I was even, who was it the other day? I was watching Joe Thornton.
Kachuk and, like, Adam Foote stick swinging at each other.
Yeah, that's a good...
Like, full baseball swinging.
Yes, but I thought that that was a, like, we're going to go out there and we're going to remind them that we're the more physical team and that we've got these big boys right out of the gate. And yet still, like, the one thing for me that I'm, like, you kind of underestimated is you fought two undersized guys in the first couple that were nasty and that answered the bell and held their own because they are those dogs. And I went, God, those guys played that way that entire tournament. They were fired up. It ignited that. I don't think that they needed the added motivation. I think that they are those kind of players that you're talking about and Bennett and Hagel. But that, yeah, you again, you show that to kids and you're like, look at all the size they're giving up. Not the, what is the size of the dog? It's the dog or fight, size the size of the fight of the dog. Like that, yeah. Those guys were the epitome of that for Canada. And so, yeah, I'm going to get into some of the bigger guys in this tournament, or at least like some of the Stars and the Leafs. But man, oh man, I felt like those guys were so crucial to the identity, to the win. Like, obviously Bennett ends up scoring that massive game tying goal, but just in general, like, that is what made me feel like we still have our version of what has always been our game, was getting to see those guys. Because we've always had skill. We're always going to have top-tier skill. That'll never go away. But keeping that type of mentality in a game, oh, God, it was crucial to me. So let me get into the old guys. How important do you think it was that we didn't age out that generation, the Doughtys, the Sids, and the Marchands?
When I saw Drew added to the lineup, a lot of people were worried it was huge because you have a guy that can still play at a high level. Is he what he was? No, but he is at a level that can calm a game down. You can talk to him on the bench. It's not like that old guy that comes in that can't play and speaks and you're like, dude, you can't even get on the ice. Adding a guy like Drew into an environment like that, where he's played in hostile environments, whether it's in the NHL 2010, and he can still contribute, having him and Brad and Sid there who can still do that, was huge to the team. And I think it was bigger to them than it was to the USA, because who really was the USA's oldest guy or who's been around that could
Kreider.
Still contribute at a high level? Kreider maybe, but Kane would have been that guy, mm-hmm. I would say, but yep. he didn't make the team. So having guys that could contribute at a high level, that have been there and done that, that have been in those environments, that could calm the guys down, that could talk to the younger guys on the bench, was critical to the Canadian game. And whether it was in that, think about Finland when they made it 4-3, right? Mm-hmm. Sid goes on the ice and gets the job done, mm-hmm. ends the game. I mean, there's still a minute left in the game. Think about even in the Sweden game, they go into OT. Who's the guy that makes the play? A drop pass. Like, I would have been like crapping my pants there, skating mm-hmm. up the ice, throwing the puck back. You know, think about the guys in the key moments that got around the puck that probably were on the bench talking to guys. And I would assume that those were the three guys that were doing it time and time again on the bench and on the ice.
Yeah. So a couple things for me on Doughty in general. So one, I had Dan Hamhuis on yesterday and I was asking him about, you know, Sid and Doughty and having played with them on the 2014 team. And it didn't really strike me until the moment of how important it is to have that dichotomy of leader, where you have one guy who is the do it by example. And I think Sid's got, like, I think Sid probably has like his funnier moments than people, has a little bit more personality than people give him credit for. Like, saw a clip after the game where he's going up to Bergeron's kids and he grabs the back of the jersey because Marchand's there and he's like, oh, that's the same size as Marchie. And I was like,
I got a great Sid story.
Oh, hit me.
Oh, okay. So when I'm in Carolina, I was checking Sid all night. And, you know, he wasn't having the best game. And then he comes by the bench. He goes, hey, Versteeg. I'm like, yeah. He goes, I remember when you used to be good. And I'm like, I look at the coaches. I'm like, touche.
Yeah, like, he's snappy, right? Like, he'll throw the one-liners around. Like, they're there. They're documented. But, yeah, I just thought, like, a little bit more of a quiet leader, like, intense guy, right? Like, boiling over with intensity, passion, needing to get it done. Extreme self-criticism versus, and then having Drew Doughty, someone who's like yapping on the bench, keeping it light, being funny, acting as though like it's just cool. It's just like another game, different kind of just a complete opposite from what Sid was. And in that game too, there was one big moment for me with Doughty, which is like that forecheck that we mentioned, that American forecheck was scary. Their boys were big. They clearly had a plan, and that was to dump, and that was to chase, and that was to hit the Canadians and force them to scramble after they had laid those big hits. And if you go through that and you watch that like carefully, people are like going to break down this film. Go look how many times Drew Doughty makes the right play and is completely unafraid to take a hit. It was
he took more hits.
Yeah.
On the forecheck than anybody.
Yep.
Willing to take a willing to make a play to take a hit by bodies that are much bigger than him. And he's a big boy.
And he's old.
He's a thick guy. And he is old. And he wore some checks. Like, what was that on the second period, Brady, when he
crushed him?
Net? Yeah. Like, he was willing to take hits and pop back up and go right back at it again. And think about teaching young kids, like, I'm not saying that's the right play all the time, right? You got to be smart about it. But in the big moments, in the big games, you got to be willing to do whatever it takes to win. Mm-hmm. I remember thinking about even personally myself, like Stanley Cup Finals, I can't imagine what these guys are feeling. But you got to almost have the like the fearlessness of willing to die on the ice. That's almost where you have to be mentally in order to win. And like those guys are taking absolute body blows going back for the puck, and he was doing it time and time again as an older guy who's been through the ringer time and time again.
Yeah, no, he was exceptional. And I think the difference too, to kind of close out on those guys, with the Americans not having like the Canes or that past generation of player, is that like they're trying to turn the page, right? Like for Canada, it was more important to have those guys there because there's a torch to actually pass. For the Americans, it's like, what are you passing? Losing all the games, right? You want to come in and be like, no, this is a younger group of players that are all in their prime. It's a bigger group of players. It's a different mindset group of players. It's not the USA hockey that we left in 2014 or that you saw in 2010, that this is supposed to be the new chapter. But for Canada, it's like, you're still trying to maintain a legacy. You want to have that line like royalty where you don't have any breaks in it. And you're going, nope, this is this descendant to this descendant to this descendant. This is this royal bloodline. And that's why, to me, it was like critical that you did have those guys and that Doughty ended up being on that team. And it felt like you did actually have a little bit more representation when Pietrangelo dropped out, and that he was just the perfect guy from not only a style of play and a toughness and an attitude, but just the personality that he would have given off in that room to those guys. Oh, God, I just... Yeah, I'm probably like a little overly romantic about it, but I really do think that it meant something for those guys to be there.
Something. What? It means something because it's a mesh of personalities.
Yeah.
You can't just take 20 guys that think the same way or do it the same way. You need guys that, like you said, keep the room light. You need guys that are super serious. You need guys that are a little bit quirky. You need a blend of personality, but you need the common goal. They all got to be driven the same way for the same common goal. Mm-hmm. And having guys with different personalities who think differently, who look at life differently, who look at different things, that's a good thing, right? Mm-hmm. It creates different perspective, but they all need to have one common thing, and that's winning at all costs. And every single guy in that room has the same common theme on winning.
Yeah. And again, the younger players get to see it. And the contrast for me too, in terms of like the lasting effect of that and why I think it's so important to have those like standard passers, those torchbearers, is that with the Americans, like I mentioned, how it was like, hey, this is a new attitude. This is a new era. That team felt very connected and they looked like they were playing for something. And when I did see Canada, it kind of felt like, you know, I would see moments where it was Marchand trying to like dig in on Marner, right? Where he's like, nice one, Mitchie, after the overtime winner. And it was like, so these guys don't look like super tight. Now they've got this incredible bonding moment that they've all had together. And it's still going to be the vast majority of these players that are on the team going into the Olympics, right? It's probably going to be maybe a couple of players different, right?
I hope there's some different players.
I do, yeah. Too. I think that Celebrini's probably going to crack that lineup. I hope that they bring Tom Wilson next time and that they realize like, oh boy, yeah, maybe we should have had him.
Well, I think you got to look at Hyman Bedard as a winger.
Oh, I'm not touching Bedard.
No, I think you're looking at a guy like that as your 13th winger, a game breaker in case mm-hmm. someone else goes down. Like you said, Fantilli, you got these other guys, but mm-hmm. I think you got to really look at Wilson and Hyman kind of round out, because I do think we were missing a little bit of that size and heaviness.
Yeah.
Not so much dog. Like, you got Konechny, who's a little guy, but he's a dog. I think you're missing a little bit of that heaviness to our game.
I agree. Like, listen, I won't even name who the guys I would have thought should have been off, but yeah, they were smaller players down the lineup where I went. If you're going to bring Bennett and you're going to bring Hagel and you're going to have the Cirelli line, like, that can be your dog line of smaller guys. Like, I need some big boys in the lineup. And again, Petrangelo would have changed that on the blue line. Morrissey would have changed that on the blue line. There's other ways that they could have had it without just, like, actually even removing guys that were supposed to be there. But yeah, I think that for me, the one miss was Tom Wilson, maybe even Shifley in that game, where it was like, God, would have felt great to have a line of just, like, mutants, you know, just huge.
This is heavier guys.
Yeah.
And, like, it's not to say I was a smaller player. It's good to have those kind of dog-on-bone, high-motor, small guys, too. But
I felt like too many on this team.
I thought Tom Wilson could have been inserted into the lineup, especially with how good of a season he's having.
That's it.
Or Hyman. You already know Hyman plays well with McDavid. Why are you kind of creating other concoctions when you could already had Hyman there?
Well, yeah.
You know, that does exactly what's needed for a guy like Connor, and then put him with a Marner.
Yeah, well, especially when there were moments where it was like, yeah, Marner didn't look like a good fit, and then he gets bumped down, and then I'm watching Stone out there with him, and I was like, this doesn't feel good either. Like, I'm not feeling his impact on the game the same way. So, yeah, maybe some of it is just, like, having that continuity.
That forecheck where you need a guy like that to go get the puck for Connor.
Yep. I actually thought the same thing watching with Matthews, where I was like, God, this really works for him. Obviously, you're not going to be able to just get the Tkachuks with him, but having someone like that's, if I'm Matthew Nyes and I was watching this game, I'm like, I got to continue to steal from Brady Tkachuk. Like, I just have to watch his game over and over and over again and go, this is who I want to be and this is who I need to be. And I'm going to have to try to emulate a little bit more of that nastiness, because I do think that he's big, strong, and willing. But yeah, God, that a little bit of extra oomph, it's like, that might be the thing that works with Austin. Okay, so yeah, let's get into Leafs a little bit here. How big do you think that game was for Marner and Matthews? Because both of them played great, minus Matthews makes the mistake that leads to the final goal.
If you're talking about the final goal, that's a collective thing. So that's a weak side rim where your weak side winger has to bust back to the net, and your weak side D, because it's going from strong side to weak side really quick.
Mm-hmm.
They have to be able to help too. Your centerman's kind of in an area. They're not playing man-on-man D zone. So like to say it's only Austin's fault not finding Connor in the slot, that's not really his guy. They play more of a zone D, so when the box shifts, your weak side winger, which is actually Brock Nelson, has to come right back. He's got to reload right back to the slot. And same with your weak side D. When your D are shifting, your D's got to be able to pick up someone too. So, yes, it could be blamed on Austin a little bit for not, you know, maybe being in a better lane or having his head on a swivel. But the way that they play D zone, that's a collective mistake. I think that's your winger's not getting back to the correct area, your D's not on a swivel, and you're not talking to your centerman about a possible guy open. So just talking about that play quickly. Now, looking at the Leafs, and, you know, as the tournament started, both guys, I know Marner scored the goal, which was huge, but I wasn't really happy with their game. Final game, both guys showed up.
Yep.
Austin showed up, had a great game, could have ended it. Binnington went off in overtime. Mitch makes, you know, he picks the puck up off the wall, draws a guy to him, makes a play into the slot to Connor. Like, where I'm happy with those guys, they showed up in the big moments. Yep. Austin wanted to be the difference in the big moment. He was just denied. Had two assists in the game. I think this bodes well for their confidence going forward, that say, you know, we're playing a best-on-best tournament. We came to play in the biggest game at the biggest time. So I'm hoping that this is, you know, Austin's probably not feeling good today, but I hope this is a big confidence builder for him going forward, as it should be, that, man, I can get the job done when it's needed. One guy needed to win, one guy needed to lose. If it was Austin today, we'd be talking about Mitch, right? But Mitch did come and play really, really well when all the chips were down, and you got to be really happy for both Leafs.
I am, and so I think that you're right. Matthews is not looking at this as anything to celebrate, right? Like, he already believes in himself. He doesn't think like he's a bad performer and big, like, I just don't believe that he thinks that. I'm sure he's thought about it. Like, I'm sure he's seen his game 7 stats like anybody else would, that he's aware of the narratives around him, but that his inner belief is not like, oh, I shrink when the moment gets big. So he's probably down in the dumps about it, but there's just no question that he was the second scariest American player in that game, right?
No question.
Brady was one and he was two, and he was so scary around the net. And it was an interesting feeling because, you know, I've never rooted against Auston Matthews. I'm watching going against him. I'm like, oh, this is a very uncomfortable, not so good feeling. And so I thought that was kind of like an important perspective for people who judge the Leafs to be able to watch it. Like, what is it like when you're feeling that this guy is going to be dangerous and was dangerous in terms of some of the narratives around him? But yeah, I thought that the areas that he was involved in too, right? Like the ways that he was creating goals, hopefully that to me is a bit of a reminder for him moving forward, or hopefully there's some type of groove that's created with that where he's like, oh, right. Being around the net and sometimes not just looking for the perfect shot, but just trying to create a play by forcing a rebound and knowing that someone else is going to be there at the net front to bang it home. Like, those are winning plays to me. So I thought Matthews good game. The only thing I'll say about the, like, I'm not going against your expertise on this one. I just thought that, like, he was kind of puck watching a little bit. Like, it's Mitch Marner. And it's like, he's got the puck on the perimeter. Like, I didn't play, and I'm not like, it's easy to judge when you're watching it from 100 feet and breaking it down this way, but it's like, you got to know if you're the defensive center, like, that Connor McDavid is standing there right in the slot and that you're rushing out to send a second man to Mitch Marner. Like, yeah, especially when that playmaker has time and space to be able to feed it over to him.
Yeah. So 100%, he was puck watching, no doubt. It's generally center on center off of a face off, and he was center on center. And then the puck went out to the weak side and rim back. Right. So generally, when that happens, it shifts into your zone. So you're basically trying to two-on-one a guy in the corner at that point, or you got to look for open guys, and you got to rely on guys behind you doing their jobs as well. So he was puck watching. I think it was a collective fault. It's Brock.
That's Nelson. Fair. I think that you should always kind of put it that way, even as a leadership core. But yeah, it was a big moment for him too, like just that game in general, because I said it going into that game, he didn't feel like the captain to me. I didn't even feel like he was a guy that should have been wearing a letter before that game. And then based on that performance, I was like, oh, okay, no. If you're an American hockey fan and you're Auston Matthews, I think your like pecking order or your place on that team was very, very clear. And to Marner's side, like, credit to John Cooper for seeing it, right? And moving on it right away, where he went, oh, Mitch has it. Because there were a couple of plays before that where Marner looked like himself, where he was cool, calm, and felt like he was creating more space with, a defenseman not willing to just like try and take it away from him. And then he created with it well. It's like the first pass is beautiful. The second one was for it too. And I like Mitch had some big early games against Boston early in his career where it felt like, oh my God, this guy is going to be the Maple Leaf. I think that specifically the play that I'll always remember for him was actually a block shot where Toronto had the lead in the first series against Boston. But I actually think that was the biggest game of Marner's career from a like success standpoint that he can build off of. And like when we're doing the evaluation of him moving forward, like that game has to be a part of the puzzle piece when evaluating who he is moving forward and what he does in the playoffs.
100%. But think about what we've been talking about with Mitch with the Leafs. Now, the Leafs roster is not Hockey Canada roster. It's not even close.
No.
But what happened to Mitch? They moved him down in the lineup. What did Mitch do when he was given more of a chance later on in the tournament? He showed up. I'm not saying move Mitch down the lineup always with the Leafs, but at times you got to move them down and make them work, whether they're a star, to get back, right? And John noticed as that game was going on, certain things weren't working. He moved him back, or Mitch actually was going well, but then he moved him back to Connor's line. And good things happened. Mitch fought back to get back there, and he showed up when he was needed, when he was on that line. So I was just happy because he was dealing with some adversity. You know, people talk about he's playing 12 minutes, lowest played forward. Not to say that's going to happen on the Leafs minute-wise, but sometimes you move guys down the lineup, and then once they're going again or you're needed again, you move them back up. And that's kind of how it worked. And when Mitch got moved back up, he made room for McDavid. He made great plays to McDavid. He showed up when he was needed in big moments when he got put back on that line. So he had to fight through a little adversity to get back there, and he showed up when he was needed. So I think that's where I'm most proud of Mitch is when you get moved down lineups, you can wilt, right? You can be like, oh, how are you going to take this? What's your mindset? But when he got, you know, he went down there, he did his job, he got moved back up, and he showed up when he was needed the most. That's where I'm most proud of Mitch.
Yeah. No, again, this is an ideal tournament for Leafs fans because Canada wins. Your guys showed up in the biggest game, and you don't have any lasting nightmare memory where you were so close to one with Matthews potentially burying Canada. You're like, I don't know how to felt moving forward.
Well, I could have. Like, think if he went down the lineup and didn't show up, and then Matthews doesn't show up, what we'd be talking today.
Well, again, man, going into that game, my feeling was, like, my prevailing feeling, and I'm not going to say I'm moving off of this entirely because I still think it's going to be a thought exercise moving forward here, but it's like Marner wants to be paid like one of the highest guys in the NHL, right? And you're watching this tournament, and there's the Hagels who are making like 8.5, right? And Bennett, when he goes to free agency and what he's going to command. And ultimately, like, he's a winger, not one of these top-tier centers. And you watched him throughout the tournament compared to, like, McDavid and McKinnon and like, Braden Point. And I couldn't help but think, like, is this really a guy that you think is going to be worth $13 million? And I think that's still a question, and he's still got to show a lot come playoff time. Like, that's not answered. But he did not look like he was a part of that group. Like, he did not look like he was a part of the top-tier guys in this country or in this tournament of impact. And last night he was. Like, last night he took a step forward to kind of show people, you know what, I'm one of the dudes that is a difference maker in this league. I had the two biggest passes in this game, because Matthews' other two primary assists were, like, shot attempts, right? They weren't setups. Like, Mitch did that. Mitch, as the playmaker, made plays and directly impacted this game in a tight-checking game where it was not a ton of space out there. He made space. So big credit to him. Yeah. Big credit to him.
Yeah, and like you said, that all those questions are going to get answered of what is his value is. I mean, when you're comparing anyone to the top talent on the U.S. and Canada with our top three guys and theirs, I mean, it's just no comparison.
But that's the problem is that that's kind of where he's been trying to kind of make the money comparisons, right? Is like he wants closer to Matthews' money, and you're like, oh, that's what happens. It's like not us driving it. It's been him.
Yeah. So I don't even know how to answer that right now. I still think he is, you know, he's worth 12 and a half. Once you start to get up there, you know, you're starting to get into tricky territory with a winger.
Agree. Okay. So last thing. Actually, you know what? God, I got still so much left on the bone, but we got to run here. All right. Do you think that goal, how big do you think that goal was for McDavid? Because I don't think he played a very good game.
He wasn't good.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to ask that. Yeah. McDavid wasn't good. There was a lot of times too where, you know, I even said it, I was watching the game, like, man, he's rushing plays. Yep. Like he would cut the top of the circle in the ozone and he'd rush a pass rather than attacking with the puck, or he's coming off the rush, he button hooks, and instead of holding onto the puck and like creating more space, he's rushing plays that are missing late guys coming into the zone. And it was just like that could be nerves. Right, you don't want to make the mistake at a big time of the game, but he got away from his game, I thought, and I thought he was rushing it quite often. And then even pucks, like, I remember the D rimmed it around the back, the wall bounced over his stick, you know. And as a hockey player, when things aren't going good and those things start to happen, it can start to go the other way. So for Connor to come through at that time, at that moment, was massive for him, massive for his legacy.
Yep.
Because when you're not playing your best game, but you still find a way to get the job done at the biggest moment, at the biggest time, that's just got to be the biggest relief to that guy to show, hey, I can get the job done in the biggest moments. And hopefully as it goes forward, it allows him to free up himself a little bit when the times get tough in the biggest moments going down the stretch and into a cup run.
Yeah. I think that it's like, it's a weighty thing to be the best player on Team Canada, right?
I couldn't imagine the pressure.
Yeah, exactly. And so for him to have already had a moment, like, I got to think that takes some of the pressure off, because honest to God, I'd love to hear from Oilers fans that have watched him throughout his entire career and watched every playoff game closely. It's like, I've never seen him look like he was playing rushed and that he looked nervous. And I thought that was what was happening in that game. Like, Slavin is incredible, right? Like, I actually thought, like, one of the takeaways was, wow, this guy is, like, he's the most valuable defenseman outside of, like, Makar and hockey? Like, which one of those two guys had the bigger impact on that hockey game? Like, he just felt everywhere and an awful...
Oh, he's good.
You're like, so good, so incredibly good. And yeah, I'm sorry I'm not watching enough of his games. I wasn't familiar with it being that level of quality. So I was like, okay, some of it is clearly that and the way that America's making him such a focus of their game plan. But my God, I just, he looked tight and that's got to be something for him.
He's the top defensive D-man in the league.
Yeah, no, basically. I mean, that felt no very doubt. Established in that game. Like that, that really did. Hey buddy, it feels good. I'm so happy for the kids. I'm so happy that they're going to be wearing the Canada sweaters and that everybody's going to be walking around, like I said, feeling that joy, feeling like, yeah, there's positive things to talk about hockey and that, yeah, we can take this and hopefully continue the exceptionalism moving forward. Thanks for making time, brother.
100%. Be proud to be Canadian.
100%. Be proud. 100%. Yeah. Christopher Stieg, again, of the Clever app, which you can download for free, two-time Stanley Cup champion. All right, I want to take a quick break. We're going to do Canada talk. Sammy's coming in. We didn't do it last night. I love those of you that asked for it. I really do. I appreciate it so much. But yeah, just needed a night to be able to be a fan and not a professional. And God, I don't regret it whatsoever. So Canada talk coming up here in a couple of minutes. Quick break before we do that. This is so much better than Freebird.
This is a particularly greasy Nickelback song.
This is what they played.
Oh, I love it. I love it. Oh my God. I'm so happy I'm here doing this with this result.
Oh my God. It's Canada Talk. It's JD Buck. It's Sam McKee. I don't think we could play this on the pod, so you're missing Nickelback now.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a real bummer for the pod audience.
So just go to Spotify and just kind of like,
yeah, sync it up. What you could do is just tweet at Nickelback, be like, hey, let the boys have free reign over the tunes. let Canada have free reign over the tunes today, Nickelback.
So, how you feeling, buddy?
Honestly, this is one of the best days of my life.
I would have to totally agree.
I woke up so happy today. Yeah. Like I was a little hungover.
Yes, agreed.
I had like a little bit of a grog where I was like, oh man, I can't believe that. I stayed up all night watching clips and texting with you for a bunch, sharing back the different memes, like it. I liked 1,000 things. Every tweet I was like.
You were getting a little spicy on there. I was like, oh, this guy.
Oh yeah, I had to go to bed. Oh, yeah. It was time.
When he's tweeting at PFT, I'm like, oh, this guy's feeling it.
I was feeling it, brother. I was in it. I was in the mode of just, here's the thing. They talk that talk. And they always talk that talk whenever they win the first game. They haven't beaten Canada. You know how many years in back-to-back games in best on best?
Forever.
Try 29 years, buddy. Yeah. Try 29 years. And you would think that over the course of 29
years, they would learn.
They would figure it out.
Not what they have.
That we're the special ones. It's our game, bozos. And they still do it the same way where it's like, man, okay, I want to get into like the best quotes. One of the things I have designed for this is like, what was your favorite quote last night? But man, being able to enjoy Marchand quotes is like, get him on the Leafs.
Well, he did the whole thing where he built up America.
Yeah.
Where that's one of the great, did you listen to that clip that he built them up?
Yeah.
Where he's like, there's multiple of the best players of all time. Their defense, their goalie, they're perfect. They're the best.
The man.
And it's just like, I love that move. And he built them up. And like, as a Leaf fan.
Yeah.
We have seen that playbook before a million times.
Yeah.
And he says Mitch Marner's his favorite player. Yeah. And like he goes into the playbook and you have, you know, the Tkachuks doing what they do. And then you have Brad Marchand before the game. All he's doing is praising. John Cooper's praising. All they're doing is praising. They're doing the good Canadian boys. They're being nice.
Yeah.
And then after we win, we're not as nice. And that's when you get the win, you're not as nice. But yeah, liking Marchand is something that has been bandied about in our friendship for a long time where you have liked them for longer than I have. Him. You've always been on that side of it.
I just love characters in sports. And I like
but
guys.
He's literally never lost for Canada at every single level. He's ever represented the country. He's never, ever lost.
Yeah.
And it's really hard to not like him.
I know.
Like that stat alone. It's just like, I think I got to like you. I'm slobbering, buddy.
Sometimes when you shoot your mouth off, it bites you.
God, it bites you. I honestly, that could be the clip for my show.
Yeah,
that could just be the slogan for this podcast. Sometimes when you shoot your mouth off, it bites you. I loved it. I loved every second of it. And again, to me, like that's this is why I know everyone. I get it. I was, you know me, going back our friendship, I was a Sochi defender, right? Still am.
Of what?
You were in the camp of like, we're too good and it's fine to not have this. And like, a very regrettable take now. Whatever. In hindsight,
nice,
okay.
With it.
But I'm just saying that I was a Sochi defender. I believed in the meaning of it, like always Olympics and Canada, best on best. But this was the biggest game since 2010. Like, there's just no question about it to me because of the narratives that were around it. Like, throughout the day, the buildup, and it's just like, it continued to get more and more political. And I just don't know how you as a Canadian, like, listen, sports are political. I'm sorry. Everybody that wants them out of it. I'm not a big, like, try to tie it together guy, but it's impossible to just not acknowledge the situation that's going on right now. Like, the anthem's getting booed. They've got Bill Guerin just like trying to, like, it's just, it's bad. Like, it was annoying and it felt very bullish, right? It's these big Americans that are playing Freebird and they're like doing the 51st state stuff. Yeah. And I will never believe Bill Guerin and the Americans that they, none of them cracked the 51st state joke. Like, I just will never believe that that's true.
The thing that drives me crazy about that stuff is that, you know, you having the president calls, fine, whatever, like, you know, we don't need to get into what you believe and what you don't believe.
Yeah, but then they're pulling that it's not political card at the same time. Yeah, it's dorkish.
It's just, if you're going to pull that card, lean into it.
Yep.
And, you know, JT Miller leaned into it. Hannafin's like, we're doing it for Trump. Leaned into it. It's like, if you want to do that, that's fine. But don't be, like, calling the president up and going on Fox News and being like, oh, we'd love him to be there.
Oh, please come.
You know what's the best part, though?
And then having, and then be like, but it's not about politics. Yeah. Like, you're talking about both sides of your mouth. And it was a brutal tournament for Bill.
Yeah.
Like, think about all the stuff that happened. McAvoy gets hurt. The doctors botch it.
Your doctor.
He's on Fox News begging. They're like, Quinn Hughes is coming. That's obviously a miscommunication between him and the coach. He goes out there and says it. It's a bad tourney for Bill. They scratch Kyle Connor.
I think
to
he
play
was hurt,
Chris
though.
Was he hurt?
I think he was. I think he's banged up. He had to have been.
He had to have been.
You don't scratch a game breaker to put in Chris Kreider.
Was not.
Yeah.
Anyways,
no.
it was a bad tournament for Bill.
That's the thing,
really
though,
bad tournament.
The tensions were building throughout the day, and it became more and more impossible 100%. To ignore. And it's like, this is our game. This is when Canadians do get the most passionate. So you take all that stew and you're firing it online. Yeah. And it was like, man,
a hard day online yesterday.
That's what I'm saying. It was a hard day, and it made the stakes feel higher. I was trying to calm myself down. Like, you go to my Instagram, all I was doing was like posting.
I saw the
pictures.
Yes.
Just like times we've beaten them.
Yes.
As a reminder that we are still daddy.
Yes.
Like, we are daddy.
We are papa.
We are papa. We are padre. And I was trying to remind myself that all day long, being like, God, that just remember that this happens. This, like, I was nervous before all the games against the Americans. But this one felt different. Like, they were bigger in the first game. They were stronger. They were fiercer. They had a different attitude. I mentioned to Versteeg in the last block that I did, like, they had this beautiful advantage of they didn't have any real carryover players. Like, it was Kreider. It was just a whole new, fresh crop of nasty, big Americans that didn't carry the ghosts of the past against this team.
Yeah.
And Canada was like, we're clinging on to some of the older guys because we have to pass the torch. We have to have the standard that is taken on.
Transition team.
Exactly. It was a transition power. It was a transition team.
Yeah.
And it did kind of feel at times, like, watching them, that it was like, wait, what is the connectivity of this group? Now they have one because they've won, right?
Yeah.
That's going to bring them together, even just, like, from this experience. But God, it felt massive, dude. It felt like there was going to be this spot of bragging rights of conversations on stupid American shows that nobody watches and shows like, who's the top power in hockey now? Is it still Canada's game?
Yeah.
Just more referendums on Canada. Do we have the goaltending? Do we have the size? Did we pick the right players? And instead, it's a celebration of our game. It's like, the relief of this, that's why I'm saying it's one of the best days of my life. Like, the relief I feel is...
You say relief, and to me, you know,
joy
at the like, there's all the emotions that go through last night and being in a bar for a big overtime winner for your
people
country,
chanting Canada in, like, the bar was
but the overwhelming, not overwhelming, but the highest emotion is relief, is thank God.
Yes.
And John Cooper said it in the press conference last night,
totally
that Canada needed a win, and we did. And, like, I can't live in the world where we lost that game last night.
Don't want to. Don't even want to dream on it.
I honestly might not have showed up, but, like, we might have just had to do a 1 hour show. Like, I don't know how I would have come in here and sat and done the referendum.
Part of the reason why we didn't want to do Canada Talk.
Yes.
The big part of it was that it was like, God, if they lose, this is going to be the most difficult thing we're ever going to have to do.
But the beautiful thing about hockey is that that was the sport at its pinnacle, those two teams playing last night.
Yeah, it was beautiful.
Unbelievable game. No, there wasn't any, like, you know, the fighting, which was incredible, but, like, that was two teams with a bunch of incredible players looking to win from start to finish. No, like there was one penalty called, which I thought was, you know, and you can talk about maybe too many to men in overtime, or there's a bit of a conversation about that one for the guy.
Honestly, I didn't feel like we touched the puck.
I know, but it was close.
It was close, it was close. I still don't think we did. Like they showed the one angle of it. I was like, he didn't touch it.
But I just, you know, it's so amazing.
Yeah.
The razor's edge in this sport.
Yeah.
Where that game goes into overtime and one goal, one shot, one off of a guy's butt and into the net, whatever happens, the two sides of that result with everything behind it, like that overtime, like since 2010 is by far the highest stakes overtime in a hockey game. Since then,
no question.
There's been no higher stakes overtime. When you're going into that, you're like, we literally need this to save our nation. Like this is, this to come together. We need this to come together.
Like, listen, we do Leafs talk. We both got into this business.
Buddy, how are we supposed to do Saturday night?
I don't know. Let's just
wear our Canada jerseys just to talk about Canada again.
Honestly, we might even just watch the Canada game again.
Just do Canada talk.
And do double dip.
Like, it's like game 56. Oh, I really liked, you know, Camp's game tonight.
No, pass. No, we're going to get the bends. Like, this is too much change in atmospheric pressure. It's going
to
kill us.
That's a perfect way to
say it. It's not going to be good.
The bend is perfect.
Yeah, it's going to be, watching it is going to be an absolute nightmare.
Terrible.
No, truly terrible. Yeah. That's the best.
I bet you the Saturday night's game is the lowest rated Leaf game of the year. Like, where people are just coming down.
No, I think people are going to still be high on hockey, and they're going to be like, well, and the other thing, too, is that if you're a Leafs fan, this is the perfect result. And
that's what I wanted to ask you.
Oh, it's the best because, one, Marner has this incredible game, like inspires faith in you, goes on the resume. It's Marner's biggest game of his career.
Where does he rank for you in the impactful forwards in that game? Because I thought outside of McKinnon, who was ahead of him?
Bennett, for sure.
I think Bennett was one. Yeah, so Bennett probably won. McKinnon up there as well, and then Marner.
Yeah.
He was right there. He was buzzing. He earned his way up.
I would say Hagel was like in the bit, but no, Marner was clearly two, or is clearly three. Like, clearly behind those other two guys. Mm-hmm. Like, that's it. Like, again, man, McDavid sucked in that game.
He was not good for the majority of the game. Like, fumbling pucks noticeably multiple times. And he started to wind it up as the game went on. I was watching a bit of the post game when I got home, and Luke Gazdick was talking about how he grows into games. I thought it was a great point because he did grow into that game. He was the first two periods fumbling it, but then he starts getting going downhill in that play in overtime where he charged it up, where he comes around the net. I'm like, I didn't know a guy could go that fast.
Yeah,
and it's like after playing for 60 minutes and he's just going so fast. But McDavid, he needed that moment.
He did.
I think you mentioned that you talked to Versteeg about how like, he looked a little bit like he was tight, and I felt like he was tight.
I didn't think about it until literally this morning.
Yeah.
The weight of being Canada's best player, because we just think about McDavid like he's McJesus. He's been the chosen one for forever, right? He's never had an uncomfortable moment in the pros outside of the injury right away. Like, when has McDavid ever looked not like a beast?
But Game seven of the Stanley Cup Finals last year. Wasn't great.
But in terms of like feeling as though this guy's impacted by pressure,
no one would ever think that.
I just didn't have a thought, especially in this tournament. He scored against the Americans in the first game. He scores the first goal. Mm-hmm. He was our best player throughout the tournament. Yeah. Like pretty much, well, it was him and McKinnon. They were both basically trading off on who was the best player of the game. Mm-hmm. But I never considered that pressure could get to him. And then you go, he's playing against the Americans. And the insinuation of this game is that Canada might not be deeper or better or bigger, but that they have McDavid and McKinnon, and he has to be like the torchbearer from one generation to the next that has had Bobby Orr and Wayne Gretzky and Mario Lemieux and Sidney Crosby. And you're like, oh, yeah.
Now it's your turn,
that's
buddy.
That's pretty intense.
And to his credit, man.
Yeah.
He has the moment.
He does.
And, you know, you talk about it at the bar with the guys. Everybody's buzzing about it. It's like it's a torch
it's
pass moment,
yeah,
right? Where you look back to the best on best against America in 2010, and you have the golden goal, Sidney Crosby, and your next greatest player of all time goes in there, and he just puck lands on his stick off a fantastic pass from Marner. And Austin Matthews, brother, like, you can't.
He's puck watching.
He was diving down to Marner in the corner.
I'm saying, like, he's watching the play come around the net, and he's dialed in to where the puck is, and he loses
the best player in the world.
Versteeg was breaking it down, saying like they're mostly playing zone, and that there's supposed to be a shift. But I'm like, it's Mitch Marner coming around the boards, and you don't have the time to be able to close the gap.
The one thing he can do from there is make a fantastic pass. And he did.
You closed on him. Yeah. So, yeah, it's a tough one for Matthews overall. But it's like Matthews was great in that game. But hold on, we'll stick with the McDavid thing.
Yep.
The McDavid thing to me, this is like – so remember after Sid scored the golden goal?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I remember everything, yes.
Yeah, it was like there was no more, hey, Sid is – like a crybaby, like Sid is annoying. Mm. It was dead. Mm. It was just like, he's the one.
He's
we love him.
Yes.
Everyone loves him. We're all kind of pseudo Penguins fans. Mm-hmm. I do have a feeling.
It's a little different with the Oilers.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying that, like, moving forward here, mm-hmm. I've been pretty staunch in my position of don't ever let a Canadian team beat the Leafs to a Stanley Cup.
Mm.
Like, kind of my nightmare.
Mm-hmm.
And watching him score that goal,
mm-hmm.
I don't know how it's going to feel when I'm watching the playoffs this year. I might.
There's only one way to know, and it's when you're in the moment.
I know. I think it's going to be like Sid for me. I really do. I think it's going to be like, I just love you too much. I can't root against you, and I want to see you be one of the all-time greats, and I want to see you get a cup, and I don't want it to ever be a conversation that you didn't get one. And would I prefer you get it with the Toronto Maple Leafs when you come here as a free agent? God. I can't. Honestly, I feel like I can't go back to not cheering for Connor McDavid is the thing. And getting to cheer for Connor McDavid.
We may be Luka guys now.
That's
like, we're just getting our yellow jerseys. We're just like, we're moving over the Oilers.
That's what I mean.
It's Oilers like, talk.
I always made fun of basketball fans that were like, I'm not a, I'm a LeBron fan. I'm like, this is the biggest joke ever. But it's like, I think I get it.
Yeah.
I think I get Steph Curry fans now.
Did you root for the Oilers last year?
No, of course not.
No, okay, good.
No, I'm not.
Me neither. But I don't think you'll know until you're in the moment.
I'm a real Canadian.
Yes, I know. I don't know if you'll know until you're in the moment how you're going to root, but I do think there's some parallels there where
that's what I'm saying.
Everybody immediately was all in on Sid, and Sid, like, it changed the percentage.
Dude, it changed.
Was he a crybaby before that?
Yes, dude. He was.
No, like, right before that? I feel like he was kind of shifting.
Yes, of course he was kind of shifting. He became more of a sympathetic figure, too, because the concussions were starting to happen, and people were like, man, we don't want to lose this guy.
His career might be done.
Yes, we don't want to lose him to his career. He wasn't, like, the early crybaby Sid that was
Ilya Kovalchuk pointing at him in the penalty box.
Yeah, like, dude, getting down on one knee and punching a guy in the the sweet spot.
Yeah, the short and curlies.
Yeah, like, guys. Not the best, but it changed him. It wasn't quite the crybaby thing. He'd obviously evolved as a player. He was a winner, but that moment was just, hey, it's done now. Like, talking poorly about Sidney Crosby now is not a thing that happens in the country anymore.
And like, I mean, I'll still call Connor a grump here and there.
Yeah. I don't know. I think I just love him.
I do love him, but he's a very grumpy guy.
I
love him.
And the other part that's going to be really, the other part that's going to be the most difficult for me is like, Sam Bennett for me in that game was just like,
belonged.
Oh, I couldn't have had more. I couldn't have had a bigger sports crush than Sam Bennett.
I'm looking
in that
at the ice times from last night. Like, they really did spread around he played. I think Seth Jarvis even ended up playing almost 12 or 13 minutes. Like, they really ended up, which
I got to tell you,
much to the chagrin of me and everybody around the bar.
Again, his biggest moment was getting absolutely obliterated.
Yeah. And he was like, the puck landed on his stick in the sweet spot a couple times where there's that one play in front of the net where the puck's sitting there and he's trying to like do these little toe drags. I'm like, if that's Zach Hyman, that's just absolutely pile-drived into the net, right?
It's gonna be interesting what they do next go-around.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll tell you one thing. We know who's in net.
I want to get to that next. So I want to, we did the McDavid thought, but I want to close on Leafs talk too, because we do Leafs, or the Leafs thought.
Yeah.
I want to close on Leafs talk. Speaking of like changing of perceptions with the McDavid thing, the one thing I couldn't stop thinking about was, I really think if Matthews had scored the game winning goal,
oh my God,
that I would have had to go on like administrative health leave because I just don't know how you could ever, like, seeing him celebrate it the way, like, like, you saw him on the Brady goal where he's going, where he's doing the, like, pooping rights.
And never hated anyone more.
Oh, yeah. I hated his guts. And I was like, I think you got to trade him if he scores the game winner. Like, I just think it's actually a little too traumatic. I know. So you're like, I'm serious. I'm not even, this isn't even a bit. I think you got to get rid of him. You got to say, which American team do you want to play for? Give us a list. You're gone. We can't have this on a night, hockey night in Canada. Every night, the 7 o'clock slot is the guy who buried Canada. And like, no, I couldn't have
in the,
it. I would have hated him.
In the 2025 never, Summit Series is like having your guy play for the Leafs, captain of the Leafs.
I'm just telling you, I thought that experience because he was a no-show through that entire tournament. I never felt his presence whatsoever. No. Like, even when they interviewed him, I went, oh, why are they even talking to you? You're not doing anything.
I will say.
He was terrifying in that game. And feeling the terror of him in that game and being on the line with Brady, I was just sitting there going, like, I hate your guts. I've never hated anybody more. This feels like an absolute betrayal. And if you score, I swear to God, I just know me. I wouldn't have been able to get over it.
Yeah, I mean, listen, it's... I think one of the benefits of not having best on best here for years.
This is the only benefit.
Number one.
Only, yeah, the, only
no,
thing.
Like, there's no other benefits.
No,
right.
I was going to say, it's correct. What's the other benefit?
That my heart like, doesn't
explode. No, I loved
explode.
It. I loved like, it. I
not
loved
having
every
to experience Matthews wearing the USA jersey has been the only benefit of no best on best.
Yeah.
And even seeing him in it, not even him scoring that winner, like there's not any Canadian... you know, red-blooded Canadian listening to this radio station right now.
Wasn't afraid.
That no, not even that. That their perception hasn't changed a little bit of him. Like, he's, you know, you're seeing him wear that jersey, seeing him play, seeing him cheer with Tkachuk, seeing all that stuff, like, you know, it does change the perception.
And this is what best of best. I'm actually stoked. I think it was perfect. It's like, you had a couple big plays. You were around the net. You felt like you took over.
It doesn't change it at all, seeing him?
Because they lost.
It'll forever change.
Because now it's like, hey...
He's done a lot of that in big games.
Guess what?
There.
All you ever do is here's what he'll say. He still is just like a game seven big game loser. Yeah. Like he just can't.
Another one.
Yeah, another one.
He said that Mike Rupp tweet yesterday was like it was like a punch in the face. I was like, oh my god. You said it to me with all the laid out stats. It's like, oh my god.
Yeah, his elimination game stats are pretty brutal.
But you're right. It's a very different experience, clearly, cheering against him.
Yeah.
And in that game, it sucked.
Yeah, it did.
It really sucked.
But that's why it's a positive for me, because I was like, good, I'm glad I was afraid of you, and now you can carry this over to the playoff run for the Leafs. Because I think the one thing for...
Do you think there's going to be a period for him here where it's not, like, for him and Marner, like, it's not going to be quite as high a level after that? Like,
no, dude, I actually think that this is the best thing for both those guys. Okay, here's my case.
We
briefly interrupt Canada Talk for Leafs Talk, okay?
So...
Canada Talk fans.
What do you think about Pontus Holmberg as the third line center?
Canada Talk fans, you just pause here, pause for a second, or hit the skip button, whatever you got to do for the next, like, I don't know, 2.5 minutes. Here's my thought. It's been Leafs slog to the finish, like nothing to play for in regular seasons, all the way to, like, going back to essentially the first season of these guys, right? It's just been like you're locked into a spot, you're playing this team, you're doing that thing. They have always only ever been able to compare themselves to the guys on the team where it's been, hey, I compare myself to Mitch and Mitch compares himself to Nylander and that's it.
Yes.
They got to be on teams where all of a sudden they're comparing themselves to the best players in the world. One, while Mitch Marner's trying to get a contract and the other with Matthews trying to prove that like he's the captain and most established guy on the team. Now you go into the stretch run where you've come off of this hyper competitive hockey and Matthews gets a little injury. He's fine. He's played well in that game. Like I don't want to hear it. I'm just saying both these guys play in this uber competitive game that makes them feel two different things, but both equally important. One, Marner plays in a big game and he has an impact and he gets to play with Connor McDavid and he creates time and space.
And didn't start with him.
Yep.
Played
exactly.
well enough to
earned,
get elevated
earned
to
his way
left,
back up, wasn't handed something, didn't just fall into it, earned his way into it and gets the feeling of, oh my God, people are celebrating me. And I want more of this feeling of, hey, I'm the man and I come through in big spots and I maybe unlocked a little something for Matthews. He's left with the feeling of like, I can't believe I lost another game. I want this so badly. It's so in the like, the so close in the rear view. It's not like at the beginning of season, he gets to go to Arizona. He's at his house. He's chilling. He's in the pool with Freddie Anderson. He's calling Bieber. He's going to UFC. He's wearing all his fancy clothes. He's in the season. He's playing Saturday night.
Yeah.
And now he's going to grind the rest of the way to try to get to the postseason. And then when he gets there, he's reminded, you know how we scored those goals? Is I wasn't trying to be cute. I wasn't trying to get the perfect shot. I was just firing pucks on nets and trying to get guys out in front and jamming pucks and getting in the middle of the ice and playing kind of nasty with some nasty players.
But, I mean, the thing is...
I like it. I'm just saying,
I like the case.
Yeah.
But, you know... I guess the thing against what I'm about to say is that it's in the middle of the season and it's not a whole off season off, but like he's had a lot of experience.
But that's what I'm saying.
That's the only difference.
It's not an off season. There's no off season off.
Yeah.
There's no way that he gets to be like, first of all, There's no Matthews. The thing that drives
and
me crazy.
And he has to go to the locker room and play on the line with the guy that just set up the overtime winner in his
set
eye.
Set up the overtime winner in his eye, but also.
Which is an interesting dynamic.
The thing that I think is such a loser mentality for these dudes, like, and year over year when they've lost and they've gotten bounced, is right away they do the, like, us versus the world mentality so often. Mm-hmm. Like, how many media days is, like, you know, it's Martin being like, oh, I thought we played pretty
we
good.
We had some
and
bounces.
Matthews being like,
well,
I'm not going to talk
about
Matthews
said last night. It's a pretty even level playing field.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, not quite level.
I know. I was like,
we
lost.
Had three, they had two.
And
so.
Especially when you watched Brady's, where he's like, we lost, and yeah. Like, sucks. He's yeah. Like, just sucks. And I was like, you're really doing consolation points here?
I got to say, that's not what I wanted from Brady, and I respect him for it. I wanted him to be excuse guy. I wanted him to, like, say
oh,
something.
Tatum? No, he's too much. The thing is about those Kachucks is that they just say they're hockey royalty. They get it.
They care.
They get it, and they care. It's like, they right. Totally, like, everything about it to market the game, like, mm-hmm. They get it. It's just, and by the way, you want the, if you, like, this is concludes Leafs talk, right? You're done with Leafs talk?
Yes.
Sens talk, quick?
Yeah.
You guys are dead. He's gone.
He's like, gone. He is never leaving.
He is out of here.
Yeah, he might demand a trade, like,
tomorrow. Yeah,
tomorrow.
Like, yeah, it's over.
Like, how long until he's the captain of the Blues? Like,
yeah, I was gonna
a
say,
week
yes.
And a half?
I hope you enjoyed it because
it's over.
It's done.
Yeah, I've never seen a more over thing than that.
It felt like you were at a party and the couple was like you could just see.
It's like, the I girl, get the sense. Everyone's pulling out their phone for
yeah,
their Ubers.
The girl's being like passive aggressive to her boyfriend. She's just like touching other guys' arms. She's getting a little drunk. He's just like not really paying attention. He's like, oh, you guys want to play cards? They're like, you should tend to your business.
No, I think it's.
It's in trouble.
Yeah, it is.
And that's the sense. So, yeah, anyways.
How about the Sens last night? They're only guys who contributed. Kachuk scores one and Jake Sanderson scores one.
Yeah.
And of
yeah.
course, I thought that was going to be a storyline where they don't bring Quinn Hughes, the guy that stays in for instead of Quinn Hughes scores one, they win. And I was like, oh my God, can't have that.
That's what I was going to say. It's the Quinn Hughes excuse. I'm like, oh, the guy that was there scored.
Yeah.
Hughes done.
Well, I mean,
so.
we didn't have Morrissey.
Yeah. We didn't have Morrissey. Didn't have Petrangelo. Like, it's just,
The Petrangelo thing, we don't have to talk about that today because we won, but
I think he all time regret.
There can't be any.
Hold on. End of Sens talk, back to Canada talk. All-time regret.
He has to have watched that and be like, why did I let Callie McCrimmon talk me into not going to this? Why did I let these greasy Vegas guys grease it up like they always do and tell me not to go to this? Because there's no way he came to that decision on his own.
Oh, I think he did.
Ailment?
But what? Why would he? Why would Eichel be there? Why would...
Yeah, I guess you're right. They had other guys there. Stone played.
There. Stone was there.
You're right. Like, it's just a really weird move. And I guess he thought it was going to be... All-star gamey. I guess he thought it was he needed the break, whatever he had. But he's got to be watched. And, like, these guys, McAvoy played at, like, when his shoulder was clear. And he was their best guy on that Saturday night. Like, that was a huge loss for them. And you felt it in that game. The physicality wasn't close to the same from their back end. And, yeah, and you see him play through what he played through. He's in there in a sling. All the boys got there. He's crying. All the guys are.
Buddy.
And Petrangelo's like on the beach in Cabo sipping his little Mai Tai. He's like, oh, so, whoopsies. I probably should have gone.
Here's the other thing, too. He's 35.
Yeah. There's a question. There's questions about Italy here. Like, you turning your back here, and we have young guys. Like, it's. I think he'll be there. But if you're putting the team together and there's bubble guys, there's no way that decision doesn't affect your decision.
I gotta
say, Doug Armstrong will love him because he's won the cup with him. He was his captain in St. Louis, so you'll probably be water under the bridge. But, like, I don't know if you're making that team, how you don't let that affect your decision.
Well, here's the thing. If you're just looking at the blue line for going to the next one and didn't have him, it's like, Morrissey's not coming off. And also, sleeper cell, Thomas Harley.
But... We were calling him the chopper at the bar last night, West Coast Choppers. Harley Davidson,
I was calling him Sleeper Cell because he's born in the States, and I was like, this would grind my ear. He's like Syracuse native.
It's too bad.
Yeah.
He's ours.
Yeah, I know.
Mean, Jack, all the Hughes lived and played in Toronto until they were.
No,
so it's like,
listen,
they're
Canadian. Sure, I'm just saying it's always like, I can't remember ever seeing a guy that was on Team Canada when they flashed the hometown graphic, they show Syracuse, New York.
A splash in the face of water.
I was like, especially as someone who was like very against the Joey Decord thing.
Yeah.
I was like, no Americans only.
He played. I was so impressed with him. I mean, he came in there, stepped in, and made me not miss Josh Morrissey, which is crazy.
I couldn't believe it. Like, I didn't know that he was like the next tier up of guy.
Yeah, neither did I.
I guess, well, they were missing three dudes.
He was probably available.
What?
You know, he was probably available. Like, I'm sure, you know, the, like, what's his name, Uyghur had sent out that tweet. He was in the on a beach somewhere. Maybe the Leafs got involved with Tanev. Like, I think he was just the guy that was young, available.
Yeah, we never saw one Harley conversation.
Jim Nill knew him. He's part of the thing. They just called him, like, hey, you around? It's like me calling up somebody to play for the Zigzags. Like, hey, can you play tonight? He's like, yeah, sure. Yeah. I'm in.
I
got nothing else. Let's go.
What's happening here?
But he was awesome.
No, I was like, is there a rule where you're not allowed to take one of the, like, you got to not allow, like, the best guys, they're not allowed to go. It's got to be a replacement level guy who's got some, like, you got no all-star games. You got, I don't know what it was, but seeing him, I was like, oh, I'm shocked. But yeah. Harley, sorry, Harley Davidson, baby. Was not familiar with your game.
Neither was I familiar
that you were an absolute bona fide stud. Okay, let's do biggest winner of this thing, because we kind of talked about McDavid, we kind of talked about Marner. Like, I actually think there's a case for a lot of guys, but to me, it's like, it's Binnington, right?
Number one.
Yeah. Number one. I know. I was trying to get cute with the takes, being like, well, McDavid scored the goal, he's torchbearer, he gets the most signature moment. It's like, Jordan Binnington, you want to do apology talk?
I mean, I would apologize. I would say that I've always been a Binnington guy, mostly because he won the championship for my beloved Owens on attack. Mm-hmm. I've followed his career all the way through. He's had some ups and downs, clearly had a lot of downs to start this tournament, a couple stinky ones. Mm-hmm. I've said some bad things about him, clearly,
in
the heat of passion.
Did you say go to Aiden Hill at any point?
No, I never did.
I did.
No, I didn't say that.
I thought that Hill should have gotten game two, but I was like, yeah.
I was surprised. But it was never my take.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm surprised they stuck with him, but I was never like, you have to switch the goalies. Because it's not like you're bringing in 2010 Carey Price, but, or 20.
No, that was the case. It's like Hill hadn't played. I got it. I just thought that maybe, you know, the Sweden game.
Kempe, goal.
He just let in softies where I went, I don't feel comfy
here. Yeah, but they wouldn't
have
got to play in that game in the final if he didn't make like three or four unbelievable saves in overtime. He's a gamer.
Yeah, but he was.
Squirrely gamer goalie. That's what
he
is.
He was doing the classic thing where it's like, okay, you're letting in softies, but then you're also making big
locking
saves,
in.
And we're like, but that game, I still think he should have been first star.
For sure, no question.
It was like, I get it. You got to give it to the guy who scores overtime goal, or whatever. It's like, fine. But like I said, I really thought that the most important players for the team were in the game were Brady Tkachuk, right? Like, he was
impactful.
Yeah, he was. If I was doing my three stars, I'd go like, I don't even know if I go Binnington one in a way.
Binnington's one.
He's one? Yeah, he's one.
We're doing a different show today without him.
Here's what I'm saying, though, too, is I don't really want to give him one because one makes it feel like we goalied them, and that's part of the reason why I'm like, it wasn't that important.
Oh, no, I don't care about that. It's a one game. It doesn't matter. Your goalie gets to play,
but
too.
But that glove save, here's why I think he's the biggest winner. It's like he had the most to lose in terms of he's never done anything for Team Canada of consequence. Like, he's filling in for Carey Price. Like, when we left it, it was Carey Price.
Like, in his prime.
We had
2014, they didn't get a sniff.
Correct. This country's goaltending history is pretty remarkable. And all of a sudden, it's in a state of complete disrepair. They left three guys at home who all had better statistics. I saw Valley go on your guys' show and do the, like, he's actually got the worst adjusted save percentage in the NHL. And I had
31, okay.
My head in my hands going, I don't know how I'm going to deal with this. And especially since I hate it when the entire conversation just becomes like, and it's all the goalie's fault, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it drives me crazy. It's just such an oversimplification of the game, team sport. Even with the first loss to the Americans, when there was like the conversation of like, he let in the softie, I'm like, they scored one goal.
Yeah.
They scored one goal early and then they completely went to sleep offensively and they were playing cute East-West hockey.
Yeah.
And didn't accomplish anything. And I'm like, okay, I guess it's all on him. Fine. But now, like, he has aura.
Yes.
He has aura.
Yes, he is that guy.
And now he's loved.
As the children would say, he is that dude.
Yeah. And now he's
just him. He is him. There you go.
Binnington is him. Yes. Binnington has aura. He is him.
Yes.
I don't even know what would have to happen for him to not get the nod to start at the Olympics now. Like, it's just his spot.
He is the goalie.
Yeah, like, he could have an .840 save, and it's like, yeah.
He's the goalie.
He gets the start. Gamer.
He's the gamer. And, you know, that overtime, they started out on fire. And I don't know what was said in that locker room, and I don't know what Mike Sullivan did, Mike Sullivan, stock up for me in terms of the way he talks to media, the way he handles himself. He's stuck wallowing away in that Pittsburgh situation. I think he should be a coach of a good team soon. I think they're maybe part ways with him, and he's going to end up coaching a good team. He's the most American guy ever, but I think he's a really good coach. Whatever was said in that locker room, the States came out with their hair on fire, and they were in the offensive zone. They were cycling. And how many times, watching the Leafs over the last 8 years, has Matthews scored that exact same goal? Where the puck comes across the net, he goes to the net, dives down, he's got the feet, he's got the feet like in the V position, lands on a stick, and I honestly put my head in my hands.
Oh, I thought it was in.
I put my head in my hands. I was like, oh my God.
I'm bad for that though. In big games, like I'm a reactionary of, oh, that's in guy. But I
usually do that. I wasn't doing it last night.
I was trying not to do it. Yeah,
and
I
then,
did it.
And then the worst feeling was when the puck lands on Brady Tkachuk, and if you could power rank the guys that you would least like to score that goal.
Oh yeah.
There is no one higher.
No, on Matthews won than him for me.
I would still rather have Matthews score than Tkachuk.
No,
for sure.
You say that now, and maybe. Then again, literally Saturday night.
I don't have to live in this world. So, yeah, like, it's a world I don't have to live
Saturday night, we can speculate. Saturday night, they're like, hey, you got to watch this guy for the rest of your life. And you're like, oh, no, thank you.
I can speculate about hell. I don't have to live in it.
Yeah, exactly.
I just think Brady Tkachuk scoring that goal in that moment, that building, his face, just the whole situation, and him coming across and saving that, that's as much as Connor McDavid's goal is a signature
they're
moment.
Tied together, yeah.
That's as much of a signature moment. And don't sleep on the one, the deflected hard wrister from the top of the circle. Huge. That he was just out of this world.
He locked in, man.
Did you hear John Cooper talk about him after? I'm not going to try to go through the whole thing, but he asked him and he gave the most beautiful, long, talked about him. Just went, and like
Cooper's
the,
great at like waxing poetic.
And he's the best in the world by
that's
far.
What I mean. So it's like when you get this, when you win and it's like, he was the perfect guy to have to speak on everything. Yeah. Like when I was doing I forgot to do this part, but it was like our favorite sound bites. It was like him talking about how Canada needed a win.
Yeah.
And I was like, this guy definitely used that in the pregame speech.
For sure.
And that would have worked with those guys incredibly well, except for Connor McDavid, who was like, oh my God,
we need this. I'm so scared. I can't give enough credit to Binnington. And you know, it's just, those saves will be burned in my memory forever. And the one on Tkachuk will be one of my favorite hockey moments forever.
Sucks.
That's Tkachuk. That's when he lost it. It's like Brady. He's like, oh, this sucks. He's hurt. Yeah.
He's hurt.
Yeah, he's hurting.
Cares though.
Deeply
what can you
cares.
Say? He cares.
No, like those guys they were terrifying. They were like, it's awful to go through it. You know how I can tell you though about how great Binnington was and what it's like with the Matthews feeling or what it could have been like? The Blues tweeted Binnington, like, his save, being like, are you kidding me?
Oh, my God, the Leafs would have to do it for Matthews.
Yeah, and go look at the replies.
Wait, of that tweet?
No, I'm saying, like, Blues fans are from America.
Oh, yeah, right. Not happy.
No,
not happy.
No.
The Blues fans are like, bud, I've literally watched this guy let in muffins all year.
Yeah.
And then he just locked in and made three of the biggest saves in our nation's history
and
on Matthews and killed their team.
That's what I'm saying.
It's incredible. That's incredible.
I honestly, like,
I didn't even think of
that. Here's the thing. I think if he doesn't have a
That's
cup.
Funny.
Yeah. Like, if he doesn't have a Stanley Cup,
he might get traded.
I thought he'd get booed.
Yeah.
I thought, like, the first save he makes, like, the Americans, boo.
Nah, they wouldn't boo. He won them a cup.
That's what I'm saying, though. He won them a cup.
Yeah.
I'm saying no cup.
It. Maybe. Yeah. I don't know. It's going to be a really interesting reception because it's home game Saturday, right, for the Leafs?
Yeah, but this was so charged. This was so incredibly charged that, like I said, people are going to get the bends, and there's going to be like a decompression period where it's going to take everybody a little bit of time.
Yeah, you thought it was quiet at the Scotiabank Arena usually. Saturday night's going to be so. Will they like how
what I would love
do you think
Scotia
they're
going
to do like a big thing for Mitch?
God, I hope so. I hope they rub it right in Matthews' big, stupid American face.
I think, you know, they're going to have to. What have they done in years past? Like, I can't remember, like, when back in the day when they won in 2002, I guess Belfour was just the third goalie or whatever. And like, there's, but I'm trying to think of like,
buddy, I
years
hope this
past.
Is a real turning point moment for Mitch Marner. Like, if we were in a If the Leafs played in an arena with real fans, there would be, like, if it was Canadians, if this was soccer, there would be, like, Mitchell Marner.
Yeah. It'd be a big deal.
Like, it would be a chance for Marner throughout that stadium, and it would.
Instead, it's past the sushi.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, where's my red wine?
When's the go trade leave? It's like, it's a nightmare, but whatever. That was beautiful. And like I do think it's going to be good for him. All right, let's take a quick break and we'll hit on a couple of other things. The final what we missed of Canada Talk. I'm so happy that there are people that listen to this show that are just so happy and enjoying it and just soaking it in the way that I was last night looking at
I left my house this morning and
so happy.
I'm going on a date tonight with my lovely wife.
Yeah.
So I had to wear my nice jacket and I brought a different shirt, the whole deal. But I just like put on my jacket and had my Canada jersey underneath, freezing cold, beautiful sunny day, had the hip on, just
I listened
breathing,
to hip
out,
today too.
Breathing out the air. I was like, yes, you can't take this away from us. It's ours. Always and forever, Canada.
I started my day with something on.
Mm. I went, what did I go with? I started with Trouble at the Hen House, which is my favorite hip album. That's what I'm trying to remember the name.
But last night when I was sitting in bed having a beer,
I made the business decision. I'm like, I'm going home now. And I got home like, two more tall boys and a bag of chips.
So I had ketchup chips. I had a Canadian beer. And I sat in bed and I scrolled and just happy scroll, liking everything.
Yes.
Firing questionable tweets.
Yeah.
And also cranked Nickelback.
Love it. Your neighbors are like, what's going on?
I think I was truly in my greatest element.
So I have two thoughts coming off this game last night.
Yeah, okay.
And it's about the future and it's about the Olympics.
Yep.
Number one, most importantly, just run back the jerseys. Exact same jerseys for the Olympics. They'll make new ones. I know they want to sell more and all that stuff.
Mm.
But I really think since the era you're wearing today, which is like the Lemieux era.
The best ones.
The best ones. I think mine are all up and on sound, so I had to wear this one like 3 days in a row.
Yeah.
But what I'll say is I think the jerseys that we wore last night for this tournament are some of the nicest we've ever worn, and I think they should just run it back for the Olympics. They're so good. And they don't have to have that NASCAR Four Nations Face-Off logo on them. Yeah. Just such an insanely big logo. I loved the jerseys. Thought they were so good.
They looked better on TV, I will just say that. And maybe it was because I watched three of the games in the States, and one of them wasn't on a great TV.
Okay.
I did watch one of the games. I watched Canada-USA game off a recording on my phone.
Ugh.
Mad. Yeah. Watch it.
That sounds fun.
It was awful.
Yeah.
I was literally on a choppy four-hour flight, like turbulence. And I was watching the boys lose, and I'm like mad. And it's one of those things where I knew the score. I knew it happened. But even in my mind as I was watching, I'm like, maybe we'll not lose.
Watching a game after, you always think, this is the different result.
I was like, I think maybe I dreamt that they lost. It's like McDavid scored. And that's anyway, that part's real. I'm not as in love with the jerseys as you.
I love them.
Yeah,
I
just think what I was gonna say is the color seems like a little not the right red.
Oh, I think they're perfect. I love the cream too. I think they're just so classy.
Yeah, the cream is nice,
but like I don't know, there's something
I'm
about
into that is nice.
So we're not allowed to
almost
wear
had a real pause.
That, we're not allowed to wear that logo at the Olympics anymore.
No,
so you have to get a creative. And over the past few years, like they did this one. The one that I'm wearing is the 2010 Sidney Crosby jersey, red, beautiful.
That was an ambitious one, in terms of the logo, but
sure,
it didn't
beautiful.
Hit. Yeah, it didn't. The logo, just saying, like they tried to bring in, like,
yeah, it's nice.
It's nice. I just
what you have on right now, the Lemieux red.
They did it. They had the best one, and and then the other one that's beautiful too to me is like the old school, like the Summit Series jersey.
For sure.
Yeah.
But we really, really started to reinvent the wheel. Since
yeah, we did.
Like 2014s
we
got to
go away from black entirely. No
disagree
more black.
With that.
No more black jerseys.
Like fully black.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, we can't do that.
Fully black jerseys.
They love
dead.
That.
Yeah, yeah,
they
yeah.
Love
I don't
that.
Mind a little trim with the red and white, but like, no, the black in general, like, no. That's that can never return.
So I wonder what they'll do. So we get to get excited about this. We get to go, like, I'm just so happy now that we get to just go through this process again.
Yeah.
Where it starts from the talk about who's going to be on the team and the selection process and the second guessing and going through it and the ups and downs. It's incredible. But it's got me thinking, like, you look at that roster, how many guys are locks for next year?
Off the top of my head,
I can
go through it. I can say I think the locks are...
Well, the obvious ones.
Sid, MacKinnon, McDavid, Marner, Makar.
Yep.
That's the top of, like, you're definitely not questioning. I think you're 100% going to have Bennett back. There's just no way that the way he played, and Hagel and Cirelli, those are locks.
Okay.
Like, those are all absolute.
You like Cirelli, eh? He's good defensively. He's a responsible guy.
The thing is I just think you need one of those guys where it's like, and even when they were throwing Tkachuk out there and they were getting those offensive zone draws, I just felt like he was going to make the right play. He did have one moment in that game where like he had the puck on his stick and he fired this wrist shot, and I was like, oh yeah, you're a D-boy. You're a defenseman. Like, that was like Dion Phaneuf stuff where it's like you missed the net by 4 feet. I went, oh, okay, you know, stick to them.
He is clutch, Gene, though.
Yeah.
Did score a Memorial Cup winning goal. I thought maybe in overtime he was going to shoot one in.
Personally, for me, where I stand today is like he's a lock.
Yeah.
And then I would say that the blue line is the most interesting thing because it's like, I don't know how many of those dudes I would say are locks.
Harley?
No, he's definitely not a lock.
Doughty?
Yes.
Makar, obviously.
The thing is, how old is Doughty now? 36?
Yeah. Sanheim?
No.
No.
Bye-bye.
Parayko?
Parayko did have that one that he stepped into where I was like, oh, I felt it.
And Taves.
But Parayko's...
So your top pair is Taves and Makar. That's
Taves,
a lock.
Yeah, sorry. I forgot Taves. But can I say one quick thing? Mm-hmm. Like, I don't like being critical at all right now, but it's like... Parayko kind of grinds my gears a little bit because he's so big, but he doesn't play that big.
Yeah, he's lumbering.
Yeah, it's like...
But he doesn't hammer
guys.
Yeah,
it's like, I need to see you...
Except when he ragdolled JT Miller.
Yeah,
that
was great. But it's like, yeah, JT Miller punched himself in the face like a bozo. Yeah, sick highlight reel from the tourney,
Talk
JT.
About that one in the group chat, loser. Like, yeah,
what a
He dark. Almost scored in his own net at the last second of that game, too.
Yeah, so this is like a little ambitious, but I do think that... Moving forward, they have to realize that leaving Tom Wilson off the lineup was a mistake.
But I think it's a different conversation
with the international ice. Yeah. Yeah, I know. That's the thing is that looking at this tournament was like, yeah, so I think Celebrini's going to be there.
For sure. Agree. Yeah,
like, I think that he's going to be essentially a lock. Mm-hmm. Bedard's still going to have to earn it.
Yeah. For me, like, you know.
But they had too many small guys, man.
That's exactly it. You mentioned that to me when we finished up here. I like some size. I know it's IIHF, and it's a, you know, you touch somebody with a stick and you get a 2-minute minor.
Yeah, I get it. But yeah, they really, credit to the refs, bro.
But I was just going to say, stock up, refs.
Yeah, refs, this might have been the refs' Super Bowl
they
in terms of
so
like.
They were so good.
This is the peak reffing.
Yeah.
It was one penalty, and it was just the obvious, you had to call it penalty. What a dumb play that was, too.
But then the power play looked like the Leafs all of a sudden. Yeah. I was like, oh, my God, what's happening? It's fly savvy.
Two perimeter, and David was like.
Sorry, savvy.
Yeah, it's nice. Been good lately.
I know.
I would say that they definitely need the Bennett attitude. They got to have, like, those attitude players still. Like, that's got
to
be. That's
you
why
still
I
have
like
to have that identity. And I thought Canada played for most of that game.
That's why McKinnon's so crucial for that. It's just like, he's just a nasty beast. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just, he cares so deeply. Him talking about Sid too is beautiful.
Loves
like,
him so much.
I could listen to just a podcast of him just talking about Sid. Help me go to sleep.
Can I say shout out to the wonderful province of Nova Scotia?
Can I say shout out to all of Canada?
Yeah, but Nova Scotia.
I think it's Yukon Heritage Day.
Yeah, well, I mean, shout out to all of Canada, but I spent 2 years in Nova Scotia. I love Nova Scotia. Nova Scotia is one of my favorite places in the world. And they created three of our nation's finest men.
Yeah, they just did it.
Marchand, McKinnon, and Crosby have given a lot to us. Yeah. And for that, Nova Scotia, I am very, very thankful.
Yeah, I really am.
Thank you. And thank you to every part of Canada that provided me with the amazing men that won that game last night. What a game. Love you, bud.
I'm literally going to spend this entire day watching clips.
Yeah, it's a watch clips kind of day. It's a highlight reel kind of day.
I can't wait to hear Ryan Whitney, too.
Oh, yeah, he's going to be...
Oh,
he's not gonna be pleased.
I cannot wait.
But the thing,
at JD Bunkus. Yeah. Send me everything, okay?
Yeah.
You see something, I want it. DM it to me on Instagram. DM it to me on Twitter.
They'll just say it doesn't matter. That's what the Americans do.
Okay, guess what? Good. Crybaby losers like they always are.
That's what they do.
And that's why they never win. They got no accountability. Yeah. Anyways, this was the JD Bunkus podcast / Canada Talk for JD Bunkus and Sam McKee. Thanks for listening. Go Canada, go Canada now, Canada forever.
Love you, bud.